Welcome to Talking Walking, hosted by Andrew Stuck from Rethinking Cities in London. Talking Walking brings you interviews with people from the world of walking, artists, activists, professionals, and those of us who have a passion for just taking a walk. Co-founder of Walk Colchester, Rowena McCauley is a chair user, passionate walker, and community champion. Although becoming paralysed some 15 years ago, her enthusiasm for getting out and about and encouraging others to do the same has not been dampened. The topics in our conversation range widely, from the language of walking in the context of disability to inclusive perspectives on access to the countryside and the relative merits of mapping and photography as information supporting walking. We chat about how she came to devise a campus map for the University of Essex, how this led to her work on a groundbreaking 3D digital journey planner that provides accessible route information both outside and within buildings. Drawing on her own research as a former student in inclusive design, she's currently developing photo trails as guides to accessible countryside routes aimed at boosting the confidence of walkers new to an area. Rowena also champions walk leader volunteering by bringing commemorative walks celebrating the life and work of North American urbanist Jane Jacobs to Colchester each May.
What is Walk Colchester?
Walk Colchester is an organisation that I founded a few years back now, I think 2010, as a means originally of mapping Colchester's walking spaces. Predominantly it's sort of urban and urban fringe spaces, and from an inclusive perspective, because that's, I should start maybe by saying that the precursor to everything is that I'm a wheelchair user. I haven't been all my life, but for the last 18 years. Although I've moved about, I was born and brought up in Colchester, and post-paralysis in 1995, I came back here to live. Sometime after that, became interested in just being able to get out and walk more around my own town. I should also say that I've continued always to use the terminology, the language of walking. It was a funny thing after my injury or my paralysis that one of the things I lost, apparently, according to other people, was the ability to use the language of walking in relation to what I still did when I was getting around. And I could see why people were awkward using that language around me. But for me, it felt very clumsy to start having to talk about going for a push or whatever. So it occurred to me that walking is not just about the physical activity of being up on 2 feet and moving around, but you know, there's a concept there that we will understand. So when we talk about going for a walk, we have a shared understanding of what that means, and it's not just about that physical activity, it's about getting out and about, exercising, taking in fresh air, engaging with the environment. And that's what was still true for me. That's why I've continued to use the language of walking. So coming back to, I'm now in my own hometown, but it's quite a different landscape from the one that I grew up in, not because it's changed so much, but because my relationship has changed with it as a chair user. Colchester is also built on a hill, and I live right in the centre on top of that hill, so there's immediate problems there as well. So I just started looking at, well, where were the available maps? And I found that there was actually very little information.
Even before 2010?
Yes.
Okay.
Now even, actually.
Okay.
I'm not sure that I've addressed the problem very well, because Walk Colchester has gone off on its own tangents project-wise. But at that time, that's what it was about. I was looking for maps and for information. And when I think about walking and going for a walk, I immediately come to the subject of maps. That seems to me the natural way to engage with walking, because I've always enjoyed maps and found them easy and intuitive. So I looked to maps first of all. Tourist Information Centre didn't have any, really, that engaged with the town centre. Certainly none that engaged with it in the way that I needed to. I needed to find out very specific information in order to be able to go out and walk. I couldn't do that. So Walk Colchester was set up first and foremost with a view to mapping the local environment. Out of my interest in hard copy maps, I had come to take an interest in digital maps. I could immediately see the power that they could have inclusively. Although you know that my position on that's changed very greatly over the last 3 years, I still think that is actually true. It's just that it's built on an assumption that all people find maps easy. clearly now I've come to a position where I understand that that's really not the case. You know, maps are quite esoteric. So the idea of building a map that's meant to address the problem of inclusion using something that's esoteric as its base is a bit of a non-starter. I would still turn to layered mapping for some purposes, but I had to move away from that as a primary focus. I suppose my starting position was that we were literally going to map all of the areas where there were off-road walking opportunities within the town and in the immediate environment of the town. And almost immediately, we went off on a tangent and started looking at the creation of specific walks. Colchester is actually very fortunate in that there are a lot of people who all vaguely know each other who are interested in not only walking generally, but leading walks. And we wanted to get going quite quickly for various reasons, because there were events coming up that we could have marketed Walk Colchester on the back of. And so we started by getting some of these people engaged in leading walks and mapping those specific walks.
So who is we? Is that the Royal We, or there's more we?
It's a little bit of both, but we do have a small number of us, friends, colleagues, who became involved in Walk Colchester. I'm actually the only one of them that has a mobility impairment. It was another principle of mine that Walk Colchester should really be inclusive in the proper sense of the word. And I mean that because over the years that inclusion has become this commonly used word, now I think commonly abused word, because it's used as a synonym for disability, whereas it completely doesn't. It should mean the opposite of that. It's not about identifying minority groups. I'm interested in inclusion in the original sense of the word, which means inclusive of non-disabled people as well. And I set up Walk Colchester with that in mind. That's been difficult because I am the creator and founder of the organisation. I'm in a chair and I can't escape the fact that that's how people see the organisation, because that's how they see me. But it's not straightforwardly what was ever intended. The way that translated into how we presented walks was that I didn't set out necessarily to ask our walk leaders to construct walks that were fully accessible, because I don't even really have a clear notion of what a fully accessible walk means. I mean, accessible to whom? I think that's always been a difficulty with the creation of accessible walks, you know, easy access routes, which is default position, I think, for most borough councils trying to meet their legal responsibilities, which of course do extend to the countryside as well, but are much more difficult in translation to the countryside, for understandable reasons, defaulted to a sort of lowest common denominator, easy access trail. And there's two or three of those around Colchester. But that seems crazy to me when you think of the walking opportunities that there are in the urban fringe and in the countryside, hugely diverse. And then think of the massive spectrum of ability that a word like, a reductionist term like disability encompasses. Then, of course, there are many complex opportunities for people of all abilities to get out and walk. And how do we make those available to people in a way that doesn't come back again to this easy access trail, which is usually no more than a mile long? You know, the terrain is the same all the way around. Once you've done it, you don't really want to do it again. So how do we get around that? I didn't start off with an idea that this has to be a fully accessible walk. I did want our walkers to bear that in mind as they created their walks, and to try and identify areas of their walks that had higher levels of accessibility as they went around. But the idea was that we simply made very comprehensive information about the walk available as the walks were created, so that people looking in on that in advance of walking could make informed decisions on their own behalf as to whether they could do the walk or which bits of the walk that they could do. So the whole themed walking took over a little bit as the identity of Walk Colchester in the early days, to such an extent then that I realised we had a number of walks that really didn't have a very good level of accessibility, and that if we were at least meant to be inclusive, we needed to start addressing things a different way, as well as having these theme walks. I started giving attention to, well, if information is really the key issue when it comes to disabled people, mobility impaired people, restricted people trying to get out into the countryside and walking, what is the best vehicle for giving that information? Because obviously information, it needs to meet the needs of a very wide spectrum of people. How on earth do you choose which information is relevant and important? And too much information, and then you swamp people and it's not interesting. And also dry written information, I think. It may do a job that it needs to do, but it doesn't necessarily inspire at the same time. It just doesn't give you that sense of, oh my goodness, this place is beautiful, I need to get out there, I want to get out there. One way or another, I came round to thinking about using photographs as a means of conveying information much more strategically than we usually tend to do. I mean, photographs, of course, we do use as information all of the time, but mostly in illustrative ways, secondary to text. You know, they are the second cousin to text. And so text drives information, and every once in a while we punctuate that in an inclusive context with a picture of a stile or a ditch or something, which is not terribly interesting. I wanted to see how we might use photographs in a way that told the story of a walk more creatively, but at the same time gave very rich information to potential walkers who were trying to make decisions about whether or not they could access the countryside in that way. And actually, at the same time, I was doing a master's at the University of Salford, School of the Built Environment there, on accessibility and inclusive design. And countryside access over the course of 3 years became a particular interest of mine. And it sort of fed Walk Colchester, and I used Walk Colchester to feed my studies as well, you know, to do assignments that would somehow feed back into the work Walk Colchester was doing. So I eventually ended up doing my dissertation on the use of photography as a medium for information in advancing inclusive access to the countryside for, disabled walkers, but also older walkers, walkers with young families, you know, the whole spectrum, really. My whole outlook on accessibility and inclusion is that over the course of our lives, all of us move in and out of times and periods and situations in which we have access needs of one sort or another.
The social model, isn't it, of looking at disability is that it's not the... It's the environment that's disabling,
yeah,
and not the person who's disabled.
Funny enough, you've touched on a little nerve there in that I am quite opposed to the social model. That's the trouble. We don't have social models of disability. We have the social model of disability. We're not really allowed to look critically, too critically at that. And it's done a very fine job over the years, really. I mean, it more than anything else has begun to transform attitudes towards disability and get people to look differently at disability and to see it in its social context. And I come from a sociological background, if you like, so I'm the first person to support that. It's just that I think that it's gone so far in one direction that it inhibits people from also acknowledging that there is an individual basis to impairment, that there are many, many different impairment types, and we don't necessarily share a common language. The way in which we do is that we've all been lumped together as disabled people by an external kind of world, and so we have that in common. But at the same time, you know, what do I have in common with somebody who's got a visual impairment? What do I have in common with somebody who's got a learning disability? I wouldn't even begin to think about speaking for them. And that's one of the reasons why I like, actually, the idea of photographs, although, of course, that does exclude one major group, which is visual impairment. It's never been my attitude, though, that access solutions have to meet everybody's needs. Again, that comes back to the same problems. How can it possibly? Whatever project that we put in place, we need to have that voice in the back of our head saying, well, how would this group of people encounter that? And how would that? And are there ways that we can design differently that are more inclusive? But not to have this kind of yardstick that every project has to meet everybody's needs. But photographs were very, very rich ways of meeting, to my mind, it seemed to me, a lot of people's needs, in that they could come to a photograph on a much more democratic basis than they necessarily could come to text. Text is very much in a particular voice, and you may or may not get on with that voice and that style of writing. And they've made a very explicit choice about what they say and what they don't say. And you can only base the decision-making that you take from them based on the words that they've chosen to say. Whereas if you take a photograph, of course it's still a constructed thing, and there's an awful lot we can say about that. You know, how accurate really is it as information? Many different photographers with different cameras could take the same scene and it would produce a different set of information. But nonetheless, it remains true that we can look at a photograph many different people take different stories from that photograph or take different information from it according to the questions that are important to us to ask. I set off on that course to look at how useful a series of photographs were in telling the story of a walk in a way that both enabled people with different impairment types to take different information from them, but also at the same time that gave them, that inspired them maybe to want to go to that place in a way that dry text didn't.
This was very much access to the countryside around Colchester. Did you look at getting it through and around the town too?
I have to a certain extent. That was the starting place for Walk Colchester, and then never really the direction it went in. Although I did start and still have in the back of my mind to pursue an alley project around town. Because Colchester has many, many, many alleyways. I'm sure it's no different from other towns in that respect. They're generally quite underused, and where they are used, they're just local to their very specific populations. They're not promoted anywhere. They're not mapped. People don't know they exist. Some of those alleys really are just down the back of people's gardens and serve a very limited population of people who've got bikes that want to get them into the back of their gardens or something. It's those people that use them. And also maybe they run parallel to a road and people will choose to, you know, they're not such a great alternative to the road version, the pavement. Others are much more intended as a walking route as opposed to just access to people's houses. But they still are really only known by people who are doing very local journeys. Of course, mostly because everybody's off in their cars anyway and on bikes, I suppose that is the case. But at the same time, we are generally very interested, I think more so everybody over the last decade, in looking at walking opportunities and trying to move a little bit away from car-dominated spaces. And that's manifested itself in plans to pedestrianise high street.
You're just starting to tell me about the Parklands Walk.
Yes, just recently I've been working with a company called Smart Networked Environments, which was actually set up by a former colleague at the University of Essex where I work. And Smart Networked Environments have been commissioned by the university to create a number of walking tours around the university grounds. We have beautiful, beautiful grounds at the University of Essex, famously painted by John Constable, with about, I think, in excess of 3,000 trees on the campus, which have now all been geo-accurately located. And we've chosen 30-something of those to feature in a tree trail, which is going to be made available as an app. And then alongside that, there's also a history trail, again around the Parkland, looking at some of those key points in the evolution of the university itself.
So you said to me earlier that that was because of the architect and the chancellor of the university.
Well, I mean, there's a connection there between Parkland walking and the origins of the university, because famously there was a relationship between Albert Sloman, who was the first vice chancellor of the university, and Kenneth Capon, who was the architect, a walking talking relationship in that they spent many, many hours and days walking around the Parkland before the university was designed, talking about their ideas on Sloman's part about education and his very strong belief in the interdisciplinary nature of all subject matter, and that it was a sort of falsity to divide subjects out and then worse still create buildings that separated them. Then Capon's ideas of how the design of the university might represent Sloman's ideas. And so the university, its design around these central five squares, this kind of network of buildings, seamless network, is slightly spoilt now by, because ever since we've been creating buildings on the periphery that do stand by themselves. But this initial idea was that architecture should represent that philosophy of education, if you like. Apparently what we're meant to do is to kind of get lost along corridors and therefore come into contact with people from other disciplines and have really interesting conversations. But of course, most of those conversations are about being lost. There is this historic relationship, walking and talking, and when we had the 40th anniversary of the university, some work was done around that, bringing artists in to explore again this relationship. Again now, I think, for the 50th anniversary, which is coming up next year, 2014, and that's maybe partly behind the thinking of these anniversary walks.
OK, and tell us a little bit about Find Your Way at Essex.
Find Your Way at Essex is an interactive map of the built environment of the university, originally conceived by my colleague Ken Guild. In fact, there was a relationship between Find Your Way Essex and its precursor, which was a two-dimensional hard copy map, which I had a lead in designing. It was called the Campus Access Map. It still is used as a paper map of campus. And that was developed as a step-free access map of the campus. But by that time, I already had an interest in digital mapping. So I had in mind that we could bring this to life. The thing you need to know about the University of Essex is that it's the centre of it is a very dense, multi-dimensional space built into a valley. Very labyrinthine, difficult to represent on a hard copy map, which is why we made it a square level map. But I could see that there was going to be a great advantage from digital mapping there if we could get that done. And I was put in touch with Ken Gill. Long story later, Find Your Way Essex is the outcome of that. And what's special about it is that it does route mapping indoors and in multi-dimensional spaces. So most of the route map, if not all route mapping that you'll come across, is in external spaces. We're all familiar with Google Maps and directions and that kind of thing. And also with maps that can tell you the shortest way, the safest way, the step-free route. Those things already exist, but they usually stop at the door to a building. Find Your Way Essex can take you from any room to any other room and give you various options for getting there, step-free, but also routes that are mostly indoors. It will do things like that. So if it's a wet day and you don't want to go outside, you can take the indoor route. And it also maps out gradients around the campus as well, so it will give you a minimum gradient route.
Okay, now you also told me that you're beginning to work on an app that's going to take us around Colchester in terms of culture.
Earlier on this year, Smart Networked Environments won a competition to produce an app themed on cultural Colchester. So that's in process at the moment, and it's still very much an evolving thing in terms of what it will be in the end. You know, will it just be about cultural Colchester, or will it be... I think we won that competition because of the mapping basis, because we can use that technology, which Smart Networked Environments called Way2Go, Where Am I, WAI, To Go, is the kind of base technology behind Find Your Way Essex, but also now will be the base for cultural Colchester. So we have this powerful mapping platform, and we can actually do lots of other things with that will serve the town, in addition to representing the cultural side of town. So, you know, our thinking is still...
But you're also pretty keen on this kind of built environment stuff. You told me that you're keen on mapping and stuff, but you're also interested in built environment and heritage and things. So you've embraced Jane's Walk, which is a Canadian initiative. Mm. So perhaps you could tell us a little bit about that too.
Jane's Walks came out of, or my interest in it and initiative and bringing it to Colchester, came out of the conference at the Hague, Walk 21 conference, which is where I met you, of course, in 2010. Yeah, it was a nice story because at the time at the conference, I was reading The Death and Life of Great American Cities, and I had it with me in my suitcase. Early on in the conference, in one of the coffee breaks, I ran straight into somebody whose name badge said Jane Farrow, Jane's Walks. So the immediate thing she said was, oh, I'm not the Jane of Jane's Walk, that's Jane Jacobs. And I said, no, not Jane Jacobs, as in Death and Life. And she said, yes. So I couldn't believe it. Again, it seemed a very serendipitous moment. And she and I talked and talked, and I went to her presentation at the conference. And I thought, you know, this is something that really easily can be brought to any town. Of course, as it turned out, there was a little bit more work involved than I originally thought. But basically, it doesn't involve a venue. All you need is some enthusiastic people. In fact, you only need one who's prepared to put themselves out there and create a walk and lead it. And you have a Jane's Walk event. And as it happened, we already had many enthusiastic walk leaders.
It's one day a year, is it?
So it's a weekend each year. It's usually about May 4th, 5th. It's the first weekend in May, because that is the date of Jane Jacobs' birthday. She died, I think, at the age of 88 in 2006. And Jane's Walk was set up in Toronto, which is where she lived for the last 40 years of her life. She was, in fact, born American, but moved to Canada in the late 1960s, and Toronto became very much her home. So she's very well known and very well loved then, because she was active, talking, as an urbanist, writer, philosopher, right up until her death. a wide spectrum of people were interested in her. I heard from somebody that in the very last days before she died, when she, not the last days, but months, when she gave a talk, people were queued around the block to get into this walk, and amongst them there were teenagers carrying their skateboards under their arms because she was a big advocate of skateboarding. She was well loved there. They wanted to find a way of commemorating her. At the centre of a lot of her writings was the importance of walking, of being out there in the most basic, grounded way of engaging with the spaces, places in which you live and share with other people. So a lot of it was about coming together with other people who live and work in your area and walking and talking about that, engaging with it as a way. She saw local people as experts on the landscapes in which they live. They don't necessarily recognise that they're experts or that expertise is worth anything. But in coming together, they know why certain spaces will work. Well, they know which spaces do work and which don't. And they have a fairly good idea on what might be the cause behind it. So coming together with other people and really looking through walking and understanding the communities, the spaces in which they live, was central to her writing and philosophy on the design of cities in particular.
You've been involved in getting that established in Colchester for a couple of years now.
So this will be our fourth year coming up. It's taken off. You know, people have really embraced it. And it really does show you that good ideas, you know, literally, pardon the pun, have legs, you know. If you've got a fundamentally good idea that's straightforward, that people can understand very readily and can see the positives that can come out of it, it takes off by itself. You don't have to do too much work. I've struggled over my life with ideas that are so sort of poorly articulated and convoluted and been upset when they don't take off, you know, but this has been a real lesson, actually. It's been a lovely thing. You know, the first year, of course, Jane Jacobs was unknown to people, so it was very much about introducing people to some of her work and just getting the walks underway. But in the second and third year, what's been delightful for me is hearing the name Jane Jacobs on people's lips in conversations that I have not, you know, begun. So that has been lovely. And walk leaders, I've listened to walk leaders talking in familiar terms about aspects of Jane Jacobs' philosophy with the groups of people that they're leading. So they have gone away and done a little bit of research themselves, you know. So that's been a lovely thing. We go into year four in 2014, and I already have three offers of walks. I mean, I don't even start thinking about this myself until about February. But even in advance of that, I've had emails and people saying, oh, you know about Jane's walks. I was thinking maybe I could do this, could I do that? You know, fantastic.
Now, we were going to do a walk in the summer, and somehow it got postponed, and it's just bucketed it with rain, but we were going to go out, and you were going to get on board a specific vehicle, and I just think you ought to just have a quick mention of what that's about, too.
Yes, well, this is a little go-kart. Its name is the Bomber, but it's spelt B-O-M-A, and I've always pronounced it the Bomber. Made by a company called Moulton Rock, based in Milton Keynes, and that company was set up by a group of people who were all chair users themselves, and I think they were outward bound enthusiasts, I think, prior to their injuries, and it's very possible they came by their injuries in those outward bound pursuits, but post-injury came together as people with a shared interest in continuing those kind of activities, but finding that there just wasn't the equipment out there to suit their needs. They created the Bomber. If you were to look at it, you wouldn't necessarily think there was any association with disability. And when I'm out on it, one of the things that I love about it, and is testimony to its real success as a design piece, is that teenage lads stopping their tracks. And you can hear them commenting enviously as you go by. So it's got a great deal of street cred. But it is... Well, I can say this. I really don't like sentimental language about disability, but I can really say it has transformed aspects of my life. What I do in my weekends is now very, very different in the last 18 months. It's because I'm out there in the countryside.
What is it? It's a four-wheel drive vehicle?
Actually, it's not four-wheel drive. I think it's just driven by the rear wheels, but it's battery-operated. It's designed for off-road use. It's based around mountain bike technology. And designed for off-road use.
And do you keep in your wheelchair and put the wheelchair and
no,
you
no,
on
no,
the vehicle?
You don't.
You get out of your wheelchair.
You get out of your chair onto it. Yes, a little bit tricky for some of us. I mean, everybody always asks me it's top speed, and it's not terribly fast top speed. It's like 8 to 9 miles an hour. If I was out, I would beat you walking and you would beat me cycling, but you could cycle very comfortably alongside it. So you can be out with your friends, you know, walking, cycling very, very happily. But where it feels really punchy is just when you move off, because it's designed to deal with hills and
or
different terrains,
or
rubble. Yeah. It can go up down steps, in fact, and it will go through about 7 inches water or something. I mean, it's virtually chitty chitty bang bang, you know, it just doesn't fly yet, but I'm sure they'll come up with that version. It's really a magic little piece of kit. And off-road, it feels tremendously powerful.
Is this something that you own personally?
It's owned by Walk Colchester. The origins to it was that there was a NatWest Community Fund Award set up. The prize was £6,000, and they had, and you had to register your project, and they gave you some web space, and then you promoted it on your web page. And then for a month, you went all out to get as many votes as you possibly could. And it was hard work, actually, because the site was a bit difficult to navigate. So you really had to put a lot of effort into getting, you know, your friends and colleagues and interested networks to vote for you. But we were one of the winners, so that was fantastic. Unfortunately, though, it was only £6,000. I mean, £6,000 was more money than Walk Colchester has ever dreamt of. But the BOMA cost like £9,000. So then we were in a situation where we needed to do more fundraising. And then, of course, we needed a trailer. And right now, we're still involved in fundraising for a steel store so that it can move to Highwoods Country Park, which is Colchester's local country park. It's going to live there permanently. A lot of people around Colchester know it now, non-disabled as well as disabled, and are big supporters of that, you know, project.
Okay, so the final thing is I usually ask people to recommend a walk to listeners. So if they come to Colchester, what would you recommend? And it doesn't have to be around Colchester.
Well, the walk that I'll suggest is at Cudmore Grove, which is in East Mersey. Mersey is an island about 9 miles from Colchester here, just opposite Brightlingsea. Very beautiful, the east end of Mersey. And right at the very tip, there is Cudmore Grove Country Park. And the tip of that is East Mersey Nature Reserve, I think it's called, where there's a little coastal path. You can go pretty much the whole way around the island. So, but this walk I'm suggesting is just one part of that. In fact, I can tell you it's exactly 1.4 miles, so not very long. But obviously, if you're on your feet, you can extend that walk as far as you want. The reason I know it so accurately is because it's the walk that I use as the basis for my research that was part of my dissertation I mentioned earlier. So it became my photo trail that my survey respondents were asked to interact with. But I did it myself in my wheelchair, not on the BOMA, in my usual day-to-day wheelchair. And I'm fit and active chair user, so you would need to be that, but I can vouch for the fact that it's possible because I did it.
You've been listening to Talking Walking, brought to you by Rethinking Cities in London. In this episode, you have heard from Rowena McCauley. If you have any views on this interview or any walking issues, we would love to hear from you. Just follow the links on the Talking Walking website. We look forward to having you along for future episodes of Talking Walking. Written, recorded and produced by Andrew Stuck of Rethinking Cities Limited. Our artwork is designed by Ian Martin of Aardvark Graphics, and the music is composed by Simon Sanders of EZtronic.